Hello, hello, folks. Welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen, and evil is the destruction of freedom. I have a very special episode this week. I'm live. We're live right now with you, and I have with me today the wonderful and the beautiful Miss Leslie Powers, and she's going to join me today. And hi, Leslie. Thanks Hello. For joining me.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, we're going to discuss today a project we've been working on. Leslie and I have been discussing a larger project for quite some time now, and we've been taking some notes, and we've been kind of going back and forth and preparing some curriculum that we'll be sharing with everybody down the line. But it's basically, we did some Awake at the Lake. Derek said that, yep. And there's Jerry. What's up, Jerry? Thanks, folks, for joining us today. Yeah, but we've been talking a lot about value, and that was something that I started out with when I created my End Evil video series. It really churned in my mind, like, where do I start when I want to discuss all these things? And it occurred to me that if we don't understand our own value, all of this other discussion is somewhat meaningless, you know. So that's what I think sparked our conversation, when I can almost remember us walking down the street the first time we started talking about value. And then since then, we've done some works, and I have these awesome clips that Leslie created. She really put her thought process, and then she recorded herself speaking. And we're going to share some of those clips tonight. And then she and I are going to expand on those clips and talk about how value applies to natural law and your life. And what else would you want to say about that, Leslie? I'll pass it to you.
I do remember us having a conversation as we were exploring the idea of creating a project, you know, around self-growth and creating a map to weaving natural law principles through the process of self-growth. And I remember asking you, like, what would be the first thing that's important? And you said value. And at the time, you know, I didn't quite get it in a deep way, but I spent a lot of time after that contemplating about value. And then I came to the realization that, yeah, I really agree with that. And so I do think that this is a topic that that deserves and requires some deep contemplation and the asking of questions. You know, why is valuing ourselves and valuing life so important? How does it relate to natural law? And how do people lose their sense of value? Right? What are the consequences if people do not value themselves or value life? And I think we can see the consequences of that in the chaotic violence of our world today. And I think it's directly connected at a root level. And and as a psychotherapist and working with groups and individuals, I work with people whose sense of value and importance and worthiness is like basement level. And they have had so many experiences in their upbringing through really poor parenting, through abuse, neglect, and trauma that set the stage for a very depleted sense of self with like a zero or negative 100, you know, sense of value and importance. And so they have to work from being behind. But then unfortunately, they go through the experience of public education and then employment and in many, you know, most different kinds of jobs. And that's not helping lift the sense of personal value or importance in the world, you know. So there's a lot.
Don't they say humiliation is one of the most things that sticks out most in our memory? I've heard that before, and I suspect it to be true. Because of I think we all have an innate want and desire to belong, to be part of the other group around us. It affects our survival instincts when we feel left out from the crowd or isolated through time. Being excommunicated from a tribe could mean certain death. So I think deep down, our instinct is to fit in to an extent. And being not valued. Oh, hi, Christine. Thanks for coming. It's cool being live today because we can actually say hi to people when they say hi. And if anybody has any questions or comments they want to interject while we're going through this discussion, we're welcome to do that. And before we move on, I want to play the first clip that we brought for our discussion, Leslie. But I want to tell people, if you don't already know, which, you know, I put out my advertisements, but this is my book, the book that changed my life. And I have some copies here. And I'd be happy to send you a copy that's signed, and I'll send you some stickers as well. I have some End Evil stickers. I've been having quite a few people hit me up for this deal, and you can get it right on my website, endevil.life. And I also have the book, The End of All Evil, and that everybody should read that book or get one, you know, for your friends. It's a short read. And I think either of both of these books are great tools to help other people, you know, start conversations, if nothing else. Yeah. So, yeah, I just wanted to point those things out real quick. And then did you want to say anything else before we play the clip?
Yeah, before you play the clip, I just wanted to give credit to Corey Enderlot, who inspired this thought process after Chris started it, right? But Corey did a project where he was inviting people to send 1 minute clips. And I had a really hard time with a 1 minute clip. And so this is like, there's like six clips that came out of kind of my thinking process. And the very first clip is the longer version of what Corey used in his summit. I forget what he called that, where he did all the 1 minute clips. But this is like the complete version of what I sent him, and then the others, I don't know how many we'll actually show, but they're variations of the topic from some different angles. So
Jerry said individual and collective versus collective. Yeah, that's a pretty important aspect of, you know, the value. You know, I've often occurred to me that a bomb, that's one thing I talked about in one of my early presentations, the big bomb, the scare that we could all be blown up by a nuclear or one of these technologies that, you know, have been created that could destroy vast areas. It kind of makes us all ask ourselves, like, how valuable are we if we can just get blown away in a second, you know? But let's move on. Check out this first. I think it's a good way to start with this first clip that we've got, and see if I can get that going. Well, oh, okay. I'm pushing the wrong button. Here we go.
What's the most important thing that you need to know? Well, I want you to know that your life has intrinsic value. And that means that you are valuable just by virtue of being alive. To be alive is both a valuable gift, a gift in itself, and a meaningful opportunity. Knowing this is a vital key to our happiness and to our freedom. Your worth is internal, yet it can and should be shared with others, and your worth is honored by being treated as valuable. We share our value through sharing our time, energy, care, and attention. Sometimes our recognition of someone's value is to leave them alone, to let them make their own choices, to support them while allowing them to be free. To value life is to value freedom. With your opportunity to live on this earth, you have repeated choices and opportunities to either appreciate the value of life or to squander it. And what you choose matters.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's reminding me that our sense of personal value has a lot to do with what we value in life, like our values. And our values are, I think, and should be connected to morality, which directly connects us to natural law. And natural law is ultimately a reflection of how much we value life itself. If we align with natural law through valuing life, there are outcomes, right, that are positive, you know, that are leading to freedom, that are leading to joy, right? More harmony in the world. If we do not value life, and if our values are not aligned with the value and the preservation of life, then we will be creating hardship and chaos and continuing this destructive cycle that further diminishes all people's existence, right? So how much are you being treated as valuable in all the different aspects of your life? How are we being treated, you know? I think that's an important...
Or how are we treating ourselves is a big part of that. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, you being a person who's taught me a lot about the work you do in the therapy with people and the importance of understanding trauma. A lot of times takes us back to things that happened to us. We're very, we're learning so much when we're, from the time we're born, the first 5, 6, 7 years of our life are a focus, a highlight of time when we're really just taking in all this information. And humans by design are not like other animals in the world where they pop out somewhat already functional in terms of having claws and teeth and being able to defend themselves and find food. Humans need the mom and the dad or whatever parents are around. They need care, and they will die if they don't get care. And during those times, if a child's needs aren't respected, things go awry. And the thing you said at that end of that that really struck me was about a lot of times freedom is letting someone make choices. And a lot of times when you're a parent, that's a very unique time you go through with your children where you watch them about to make mistakes or about to fall down when they're trying to learn to test gravity or drop something they shouldn't drop. And you have to start making this choice of like, at what point do I let this little being spread its own wings and stop helicoptering in there to save them? And then when we grow to be full beings, like, why are we still helicoptering in each other's lives and having to be like parents or have these artificial parents in the form of police or government or childcare workers and other people because we can't handle our own business because our lives are so fractured and we don't like really value the time with our own children even because we're already split off. Anyway, I'm getting off into too many topics, but the value of letting a child make their choice and being a parent gets you that unique opportunity that you alluded to. I'd like to, you know, pass the mic to you on that.
So children are programmable, right? You know, children are born in the world and with this innocence and this, they're learning by example, they're learning by how they're treated. So if a child is not treated as important, safe, you know, if they're not safe, important, and belonging, those are kind of the basic needs of all children and really all people, is to feel safe, to feel important, and to belong. So this idea of value is reinforced or it's reinforced by how you're treated in the world, you know, by your parents. It starts in infancy. That's the foundation of that self, the creation of the self and the sense of self being important. And so the parenting aspect's huge. And so what is being fed to the young child about their value? And you're right. Like if that helicopter parent is making all the decisions and telling the child everything, you know, without allowing that child to learn how to think and experience through life, you know, then they may feel that they don't have the ability even to make good decisions or that they're not capable, right?
Or kind of not know, right? Because there's that stage of development when we really separate from our parents or the authority that's telling us to do things and realize I'm my own person. Well, I think probably that isn't happening to a large scale on like the largest percentage of humanity aren't getting to that point of really recognize their own individuality value, because if they did, they would never let people and authorities and all these people stomp on it the way they do.
Yeah.
When you were just talking there, I was thinking about my own neighborhood, the greater community, and the way I felt valued. You know, the way police treated people in my neighborhood, I could see the difference between the way they even treated me and other people that looked more like gang-like, let's say, you know, or maybe different ethnicities. You know, they treated people like they were lower than themselves. And yeah. I saw that many times. And you see that reflection in the greater society too, at school, at, you know, various public events, people that have fancier stuff or have more wealth kind of like seem like they're worth more than people that are lowly and poor. And that's like built into our sick system. And you get that feeling from the time you're very young. You know when you're a poor kid. You know, let me put it that way. You know?
Yeah. And it really warps the whole definition of value, with value being seen as something extrinsic and something material related to money. And I'm really making the point that this value is intrinsic, and it has nothing to do with the pocketbook. It has nothing to do with your job. It has, you know, your title. And that so much of the values in society are really backwards, and they're not reflecting a value of life itself, or the value of individuality, or the value of freedom, or the value of free thought. You know, Rick asked a question, how important is it for parents?
Yeah, what's up, Rick? Thanks for joining us. Put his question on the screen.
Yeah. How important is it for parents to let their children make mistakes? Well, I would say that, you know, it is important.
What kind of mistakes are we talking about here?
Yeah. What kind, you know, certainly life and death kind of things you don't want to, you know, to like.
Everything we do is mistakes in a lot of ways when you think about it. You know, I just was watching that video with Brandon Martin and James Cordner. Mm-hmm. And Brandon Martin was talking about how we are natural deo-cultists. From the time we're born, we're trying to learn to see things that are hidden, you know, and that was just such an amazing thing. I can't wait to compliment him and next time we see him. Yeah. But that was just such a great thing to say. We're always trying to solve problems, and every day is like a series of making mistakes and figuring out how to get better. That's not really a bad thing. We're taught a mistake is part of the conditioning that's devaluing.
Right. But what is the condition that really makes children afraid to make mistakes or afraid to try? It's really the abuse of authority. It's the concept of authority itself, you know, where, you know, I talked to someone recently who anytime they made the slightest mistake, they might have gotten hit in the head, something thrown at them. You know, they were basically trained to aim for perfection, which is impossible. And so they never got it. They never met the mark. They were, you know, afraid now as an adult to deviate out of the box, right? They're obsessive somewhat with perfection and very rigid rules and rigid authority-based structures, because that type of treatment as a child, you know, where mistakes were not welcome, where mistakes were seen as, you know, something that makes you bad or wrong or not valuable, you know. And there's so many people in this world who have been raised with hyper, like, authoritarian models of treatment, with physical violence, with a lot of emotional and, you know, mental abuse. I mean, it's rampant. And all of that is conditioning children into feeling less than, feeling small, feeling unimportant, where the value is placed on following direction, trying to please adults. And a lot of people end up people pleasers, totally don't have a sense of self, put everyone else ahead of themselves, and then treat themselves poorly, right? So this, if you lack internal value, then you don't really give a shit about your health, about how you eat, about, you know, whether you, you know, just escape your pain with drugs or alcohol. You know, it just totally disorients an individual from everything, you know? And this, the authority-based system is part of that, because if, you know, children do need, how do you learn? You know, you have to, you know, think about a business, right? If you're going to start a business, the coaches I've heard, they say, you know, you have to get used to failure.
you have to recognize that you have to, you know, your first idea might not work. You might lose, you know, before you gain. Well, how does a person stand that if failure means that they're
no good?
No good.
You're no good at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's, I think I've seen that so many times where people got devastated very young by something where they just got hit way too hard. And it's like, they just want to, they got this kind of give up thing after that. And it's sad because it's so many aspects, like I described in the Tesseract, there's so many walls around us in these belief structures and these, you know, the real true authority is natural law.
Yeah.
But let's bring that next video clip in, and I think you might even address some of this. So let's bring that next clip up and check that out, and that'll give us some more discussion points here.
Feeling not good enough and not important are common mental scripts that hold people back from expressing their value or from defending their right to be valued. This often results in harming others or letting oneself be harmed. Right or moral action demonstrates and preserves the knowledge of our worth and reflects our birthright to live free from harm. By recognizing the value of all life, we know the wrong of hurting or of stealing from others, and we will refrain, for we suffer when we hurt another. It's simple, really. Value all life, preserve and defend it, live life richly, and appreciate yourself in the world.
I like how you said that. It was beautiful. Appreciate yourself. I think that kind of brings me back to what we spoke about earlier. I realized later, much later in life, that I had a pretty negative script running. I remember I've talked about it before on the podcast. My friend Agnieszka in Autonomy kind of pointed it out to me more vividly than anyone had done. Or just, I happened to be listening at that point. And it's like, how are you talking to yourself? And I hear myself saying things, and I hear this from other people often, like, oh, I'm just not that good at that, or shoot, I always screw that up. You know, I always have a problem with that. That's something I'm not that good at, you know, and like repeating these phrases. And we're very programmable beings. So what we're actually doing is programming our brain that, oh yeah, let's keep screwing that up. And let's just identify our whole self with that negative thought when, you know, mistakes and actions and things that have happened in the past are very, you know, it depends how you contrast and compare and put them into context. If we'd been looking at them the whole time, like learning opportunities, you know, like Richard Grove was teaching me at that time, all of a sudden it's like, oh, great. I just made a mistake. Awesome. You know, I'll learn from that one, you know? So.
Yeah. I lost my thought. So to appreciate ourselves, think of the word appreciate. Appreciate comes from, it's like building value, right? You appreciate something, it's like the value multiplies. And if you have a sense of value, then you will feel free and you will have the motivation. You'll be free to create. You'll be free to talk, right? You'll know your ideas, your thinking process has some worth. It has something to add to a conversation, to add to life. But if you don't have that sense of value and you're not going to be attached to your purpose, because you're going to feel unworthy and purposeless, not important. And if you don't feel good enough, if you don't feel like you're valuable, then what are you going to do? You're going to defer to other people to make the important decisions. You're going to vote for other people because somehow they are more important and have more value, right, or rights to make it because you're small, you know, and that's a big part of what's contributing to this dysfunctional system we call government, really is the foundation of people not even appreciating and valuing their own importance, their own intelligence, their own ability to solve problems, right? And that playing small is somehow internally justifying giving away your rights, which you really can't do, but people think, right?
I looked up the etymology. It's been a minute since I've looked that up for value. It looks like it comes from Latin valere. Almost sounds like the gas station.
Volare.
Valere is to be worth, to have value, to be of worth. And, you know, worth is a similar to be well or strong. I guess those are the other two major things I was saying, well or strong. So what I'm thinking about is a lot of times I give myself a compliment out loud, and I do that because I'm still rewriting the script in my own mind, and I've made it a point to be complimentary towards myself. And I think sometimes it almost comes across outwardly. I've noticed in certain places, it almost seems like people, like I'm braggy, you know, and I could see where that comes across as bragging. But, you know, it's a fine line how we deal with this thing we call our ego. And I think modern society has kind of made us like feel guilty about feeling good about ourselves. Like if you even just compliment yourself out loud, the people are like, oh, you're going to compliment yourself, huh? You know, like that's something you shouldn't do. You know, you're supposed to always put on this pretense of being
humble.
I don't know, how do you say it, right?
Like over humble, being, but like humble, yeah.
Being having self-pride is a bad thing.
Yeah. I think, right? That's what's one of the kind of misdirection, you know, that kids are taught. And, you know, I really respect what Rick is saying here and have a lot of compassion, you know, for having a physical disability. And then all the ways that children are mistreated and not seen as valuable. And, you know, that's based on the materialism of our world and this whole way we've been trained to be workers, to make money, you know, that somehow that's what creates value in society. It's a very backwards, human, it's just devalues humanity itself, and it's hyper materialistic, right? And what we're talking about is the mental and spiritual value. The value of life itself is something that isn't measured through you know, your work title or your abilities to, you know, do labor or be strong. You know, I think even in that definition, to be well or strong is kind of indicating a bit of that materialism, material value. You know, clearly we all want, you know, to value our body, right? So if we value ourself, which internally, then we will be inspired to take care of our vehicle, our body. And I think that is important. But sometimes,
well, look how much a belief system can corrupt that too. Like, in terms of one thing I've thought about often, family members I've known that have had like very strong religious attachments, belief systems, you know, God's doing this, God's doing that, like making God, from my point of view, it sounds like they're making God into a personality who's vengeful and sometimes nice and sometimes mean. And I'm thinking, man, if I saw reality that way, I'd always be feeling like bad about all these things I did, you know, like God's going to be mad at me, you know, like it's kind of a smack in the face of natural law to start making up that much storyline about something that's not the facts. What we know the facts are that, yeah, there's cause and effects in the world, and that we have these emotions that make us feel bad for doing certain types of things, like, you know, and stealing, but there, you know, these whole other ideas and belief systems can cause guilt and, you know, drinking and getting into bad habits and having mental problems because we're so tied up in our head about, you know, all this stuff that we really don't know, that are storylines, yeah, that other people made up, that maybe, like, they'd even made them up to control us.
Right. Good old Catholic guilt, you know, castigation, self, you know, flagellation, right? Punish yourself for your original sin. You know, that's a diminishment of our value right from the start, that we're born with sin, right? This whole idea of walking through life being guilty for being alive, for having desires, for having natural,
for having doubts,
impulses, or for questioning what you're told if in church or from your parents. And so that is the programming, that, and that is part of the, where the man-made structure derails the natural law principles, you know? And I think there's a big difference between, you know, taking a human system and overlaying it, right? Putting it on, imposing it onto a child as based on fear and guilt, right? And then kind of messing up a kid's natural antenna, you know, about what's right and wrong. I think that there is a natural mechanism built in physiologically to us in our nervous systems, but based on healthy relational attachment and the experience of our emotions and the experience of empathy, the experience of care and compassion being role modeled in our life with healthy boundaries, right? Boundaries are a form of self-protection, a protection of life, right? And if that natural process isn't allowed to unfold because of too much, like you're saying, like control behaviors, you know, then children are going to lose touch with that potential.
Yeah. It's like you're already derailed because mm-hmm. you're off on this train of what's fantastical thinking that other humans have created. Let's get into the next clip and see where that takes this conversation. Okay. I have to cue it up. Just give me 1 second here. Replace screen sharing. Clip number 3. Okay, here we go. Let's share that one.
Right action is in context to a relationship with ourselves and among other living beings, with people, plants, animals, and Mother Earth herself. To know the immense value of life means that we will protect and defend all living beings. Good is available to all of us, yet it is us humans who commit the most atrocities, the wrongs. We steal good from each other. We devalue life itself through stealing from others, especially by stealing one's right to free choice and voluntary interactions. And these things, I think, are what the world most needs now. Free choice and voluntary action, respect for life.
Yeah, the best respect of all.
Yeah, you know, it disturbs me, like the wars are going on, right? I've been going on so many wars and so many millions of innocent people, children, you know, innocent people are being killed. And I saw a post that like really enraged me about how it's justified, right? Because we need to somehow this killing of all these innocent people over there is somehow protecting us over here. And somehow like saying our lives in our country are more valuable than the lives in over there in that country. And it's like this warped mentality that to me is devoid of any real reflection on the true value of life and that exists in all people, all individuals, all living beings. And how did we get so far from this? How did our minds get so disconnected to be able for someone to say something like that or to have a lot of people believe that? That somehow it's justified that the means, the ends justify the means.
Right? Yeah, it winds up being very reactionary. It's like we're only in this material moment reacting to what's happening right now. And it's like, oh, those guys over there dropped a bomb. Let's kill them. You know, it's like, wait, let's think back a little bit. What's the bigger situation here? If we humans accept that these authoritarian type psychopaths can rule over us, that creates this scenario where big giant armies can be developed and deployed in different parts of the world for various reasons, and they can do large scale army bombing and attacking, etc. If we humans earlier on in history had said, you know what, it's not a good idea to have any type of authority ruling over other people, and we kept ourselves to various small gangs and groups, then that would be the largest they were going to get, you know, like small groups and tribes, which, yeah, there's always going to be some sort of conflict. I imagine violence is going to happen from time to time. But when I'm talking about ending evil, the biggest evil in the world is these massive structures that can kill hundreds and thousands of people in a click of a button or flip of a switch. And that only happens when we prescribe to this belief of authoritarianism that we can vote in people and they're going to be in charge of masses and masses of other people, which is a preposterous idea that that's ever going to work. All it does is create an open lane for psychopaths to rule over the rest of us. So, you know, we can recognize that, yeah, this problem's gone so far down the hill that, yeah, things are really screwed up right now. And there's a lot of war and there's a lot of hunger and there's a lot of slavery. But that doesn't mean that we can't understand the concepts and the philosophies that would lead us towards a better future for all of humanity if we started making those intelligent decisions as of now or as of tomorrow or soon as possible.
Right.
Then maybe down the line, you know, our kids or their grandkids might be starting to really work in that direction in a physical way in the world. But we got to get the concept across, because right now people believe in this lie that you can grant somebody authority to own your body and other people's body and just tell them all what to do, bomb them when you want, etc.
And that somehow it's justified to just eliminate, you know, huge numbers of people based on irrelevant, you know, details or demographics, you know. And like if every decision we made, we took into consideration, is this going to damage life? Is this going to steal from life, from living beings?
Inhibit the creative process.
Including that is the result of life energy is creation, right? And if our actions are going to disrupt that life energy, that force of creative potential and growth, then it's wrong. You know, if violence is wrong so clearly because it clearly devalues life. And so there's never, in my view, there's never a justification for like whole armies to go in and just start bombing random towns. Like this is a whole storyline that's been planted in our history for us to think it's okay, you know, that it's the only way. I mean, you watch these history shows and it's kind of cool. Like they get all nerdy into the strategies of the generals and all this. And yeah, they're really intelligent people and they have this sort of like left brain, like brilliance, you know, that gets way overvalued. Why is that so valued and they're not even talking about the morality, you know, of those actions and how it's actually just obliterating towns and races of people. And then after those wars, then there's all the trauma that is resulting, that affects, it infiltrates everyone who's been touched by that, that then epigenetically and genetically gets passed on through the generations and brings us to this ridiculous place of blindness that we're in right now, you know, believing in authority and believing in the justification of war and violence. And so it's like people wake up, you know, and start to see that this culture that we're in has been so systematically used against us. It belittles us, that it devalues us, our intelligence, the brilliant potential of our humanity.
Well, you know, I'll say this one more thing and then we could go to our next clip. And welcome, Elliot James, and thanks for sharing Giordano Bruno episode talking about natural law on YouTube, Angela's Symposium. We'll have to check that out. But that's in the chat, folks. You can check that out yourself on your when you're done with this episode or whenever. But you know, I've been really studying World War II for quite some time. I've been very fascinated. I imagine I'm one of those people that bore you with the strategy of officers and such. I get very interested in strategies and tactics and I like to know every battle that went down, why, how it happened, who won, by how much. I like all those details. And the reason is because I've realized there's part of me that is really on a deep level. I care about the facilitation of teamwork. And I want to know how groups of people work together to accomplish tasks. And when they do that in battles, one group does that more effectively than the other group does. And that says something. I want to know why. Because the question looms, like, what if we had an international world voluntary peacekeeping, natural law peacekeeping force that was made up of individuals that only used that title when they chose to be part of it, when it needed to be done. So in other words, some evil action start erupting in some part of the world. Everybody puts on their peacekeeping, you know, I'm going to go deal with this. And we all go out there because we all know it's all of our responsibility. Thousands of people converging from every direction. And they're just, you could basically just hug the evildoers because there's so many of us, they wouldn't even be able to do anything. They'd be like little Tyrannosaurus Rex arms with thousands of people converging around them saying, no, we don't do this in this realm. We don't act like we own other people, you know, but how would we get from where we're at to there? It's not an easy process. But I guess the part I bring it up about World War II is there are situations where somebody has gone far extreme on the evil end, like Germany and Japan. They were straight up bombing countries and driving their tanks from country after country. And a lot of people were trying to make peace with them, and they weren't. They were just breaking treaties, bombing the very people who built their tanks, and, you know, sneak attacking. And so it gets to the point where you do have to organize forces and you do have to stand up against somebody that powerful. And so I understand the fear and the need, the concern for the ability to be able to defend ourselves against massive evil forces. But I think that needs to happen sooner on the moral understanding of our personal sovereignty before it ever gets to that point.
Right. And the order followers, right? If every soldier and every police officer understood the truth and cared about the true value of life, they wouldn't be doing those things, right? There wouldn't be the war. There wouldn't be the killing of the innocent. You know, there are people who are evildoers that need consequences, you know, that they're very buffered and protected because of all the distractions and the excuses to create, you know, violent situations. And it becomes, again, obfuscated. The truth gets obfuscated and people get put into traumatic responses.
Like cycles, right?
Right. You know, the war, these things are meant to disorient people and put them into fight, flight, or freeze. It actually is a physiological attack. An emotional trauma is a physiological attack because it disrupts how your physiology works. It shuts off the frontal lobes. It shuts off the thinking brain, puts you into the animal brain and the reptile brain where you're purely emotional and physiologically reacting to protect your life, right? So a lot of this kind of war mentality, I think, is very deliberate to totally traumatize humanity and to take us out of our brain, our thinking brain, and to take us and for people to feel helpless and powerless and, you know, ultimately not able to solve a problem.
You know, some of those World War II battles, like 500,000 people died in a day, like just like that. You know, imagine how many mothers and sisters and children,
oh my God, yeah,
all just lost this like super important link to their heritage and memories and skills, et cetera, times a million. How many times has that happened? And what really creates that? I think of leverage, right? Like, imagine you're trying to get the lug nut off of your car and it's on their way too tight and you can't get it by yourself. What do? You get a bigger lever, right? Imagine getting two people on that longer lever and two people lean on it. Then you can move it, right? And like, so we have a world right now where you got hundreds of thousands of people leaning on the lever of let's believe in authoritarianism and statism. And that's why it's working so well. As soon as there's enough of us like not leaning on that ridiculous path and saying, no, let's not let anybody rule over us at all. And let's work out things on a personal single level. And when there's a danger that's larger, then we form some sort of group that's loosely formed that we can disassemble when it's done.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I don't know how all those things would work, but I think there are other ways to solve problems. I think that's the bottom line, that we don't have to solve problems in the way they've been historically solved, like not been right. solved. History and all the interventions to solve and bring peace have not brought peace. They've not brought health. They've not.
Well, maybe some weird level of it, but the contrast is massive death, massive slavery.
Yeah. Right? And traumatization that goes on through generations of people that we're still feeling it today, which is why we have so many kind of zombie-fied followers and people just trapped in, you know, the matrix, right? Because they're so disconnected. And so if everyone can just start to reflect on all the ways that the systems, the status systems of our life are really disrespecting us and really not valuing us, not giving us free choice, free will, voluntary action, that are basically telling, you know, kind of we're putting in for survival, just living to survive, you know, and jumping.
It's bigger than just us too. Like, it's a slap in the face to reality's laws, right?
Yeah.
It's telling reality, exactly. Like, oh, I don't really like your laws. I'm going to make up these other ones.
Yes.
Where we get to, you know, and I get it, where we have technology, we're always trying to get better at things. And I think there's a point where we go too far. And the technology of how to manage groups, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. But I've seen in my years of doing group facilitation and being in different situations, I've seen groups that work together because they're all there voluntarily and they all want to be there and they want to get something done. And they actually do a great job. And the other thing I've noticed about individuals is most of us, like, we learn better when we want to do something, when we're having a good time. If there's a little song, you can remember something better. If you're having fun with a group of people, you can stay up later because you're having fun and your will is turned on. And so working together is very possible. The only thing that holding us back from doing that is a belief system that it's not possible for anarchy to work, which is kind of ridiculous considering that anarchy is the default condition of reality, that before anyone created these structures of belief, there was not that. And somehow we survived that period of time. And then somehow we devolved from there. And I don't know why. Yeah. But I kind of lean on the intervention or interjection or whatever theory you want to call it, where
interference.
I do think that humanity has been kind of bitch slapped in history and we're still reeling from this trauma that we collectively have to, like, wake up to and realize, like, we have been beaten up. We've been used as slaves, as a race, and we need to stop doing it to ourselves, just like the father that abuses the child and then that child abuses that child. And it goes on and on and on and never stops until someone says, you know what? We got to stop treating each other this way.
Yes.
Even though I'm in pain, I'm not going to pass it to someone else. I'm going to heal myself.
It's like Mark Passio talks about cosmic abandonment and the concept, the resulting experience of self-loathing as a species. That's what we're talking about, is as a species having self-loathing. And that is a diminishing our value, which is given through the creator, this grand architect, the God, however you want to call it, that is ultimately the creator of all of what is true law, natural law, that has the potential for us to thrive and to create brilliant, creative accomplishments, right?
Absolutely. Let's move on to our next clip. Leslie, you ready? Okay, this is, we did number three, is that correct?
We did three, now we're four.
We did three clips so far, as I recall. Okay, I think this is number four. And let's get that started.
Illustrated by knowing your rights. By recognizing your rights to good treatment, you will be motivated to protect and defend those rights and the rights of others. Make remembering your intrinsic value and claiming your natural rights a priority. You will more likely see how you are being exploited, and then awaken to the reality of slavery in the world and the increasing threats to our freedom.
Well, that was right on cue to what we were just discussing. Yeah. That was the one we started partway in. I remember we were discussing it before the show. We thought that'd be a good point to start.
This no, the sacred word, right? You know, it's like defending, but also protecting through setting boundaries around what you say yes or no to. You know, our boundaries basically determine our life experience. Think about that in your life, you know? And what are you basing your yeses to, and what are you basing your no's to? Is it coercion? Are you saying yes to the DMV because you really love, you know, paying money and putting a sticker on your car? No, we're saying yes because we're coerced, right? And we say no sometimes to things like public speaking, like making content, because we feel small, we feel unimportant, we feel not good enough. It's not based on truth. It's based on your self-loathing, right? You know, how do you interact with the people in your everyday life? You know, where are you codependent? Where are you responding outside of your actual value system? You know, we all need to look at those things and start in the small micro places of our life. And then we can start building up to the bigger things. But we're not ready really to go like say no to the DMV yet, you know, probably for the most part, right? Because we haven't even gotten our internal like life straight on a small level. And we're not unified.
I mean, the philosophy comes first, but I think for each of us, there's got to be a mental, spiritual, physical connection. I mean, in a way, that's what spiritual is when we connect the mental and the physical together, right? So we start to understand something, it starts to make sense, kind of like going through the Trivium process. You get all the facts together, we're kind of like going back and forth in our mind and, you know, say, well, this is a fact, this is an intuition I have. And then we kind of, at the end of that, we have our rhetoric where we've learned something. And so I think I lost my train of thought. Where was I going with that, Lizzie?
I don't know, Chris.
You don't know. We're good.
But I think yeah, you're talking about the Trivium process and how we are going to make our decisions, and the yeses and nos, right, are really should involve our use of our critical thinking outside of our pressure to conform or our response to coercion, right? So we're not just saying go out and just like be a complete rebel, you know, but we're saying, you know, like gather your data. Listen.
I remember, yeah, where I was going with that, you know, like the input, the processing, and the output. So there has to be a parallel journey. I've noticed in my own personal journey, I've tried to think of all the things that I do that are, like I'm saying, a slap in the face to natural law. And I'm still doing a lot of those things, like a simple one, like you're pointing out. I still do appease the DMV. I still make my car look like it's supposed to on the road. And I know some people are like, you're not an anarchist if you're doing that. And I'm like, okay, I'm not yet. You know, like I'm doing it by trying to get the philosophy understood and communicating that. And then in my life, in the physical world, I'm making whatever changes I can in that direction. So I'm trying to learn to be more self ownership, whether it be health, you know, by taking care of my own health, finances, by not beholding to a big corporation with where I get my money, but instead learning how to produce things of value that people will pay me for. And that's been a tough journey, you know, like, so each of us, I guess all I'm getting at in the physical world, each of us has to kind of modulate and do what we can in this slave system, because really, if we were going to change things on the greater picture in terms of not using authority and not having, it would take a lot of people starting to make this change and having that philosophy solid in their mind, so solid that they wouldn't let authoritarians keep spouting their religions and forcing them on people. And if we as a large groups of people all understood that, the physical world would would change in that order, the more people that had that concept and understood it. But as single people in a war on freedom, you're like a person standing out in a field with a tiny little pellet gun, and they got tanks and bombs and nuclear warheads. So you can't exactly just go full anarchist in the physical world right now, or you're just going to get annihilated. It's something that involves other people. And that's where the tree of life, the integration of understanding that we all affect each other. That's what this natural law thing's about, that it's not just an individual process. It's also about other people. And that's why we have these conversations. And that's why we're here.
Yeah. I wanted to say that we have the world of ideas, philosophy, very important, sort of the all is mind, understanding and observing and getting a grasp on these principles is primary. And then taking those principles, we can start to look at the bigger world, the collective, and I think a lot of people are able to see the violations at the collective level, right, and feel fairly powerless in a lot of ways to stop anything and not sure what to do. And people hit these kind of awakening experiences that are crises on some level and really upsetting and therefore, and then not sure what to do. And then, you know, teaching the principles and the concepts is one avenue. And I think as or more important is taking the concepts and then winding back to your own life, right, to yourself as an individual, and looking at the principles in relationship, in your relationships, because morality is about relationship. It's about how we treat other living beings, right? And so we can look and analyze, just sort of assess our lay of our land, you know, and all our relationships. How do we relate to ourselves? Do we have a proper inner monarchy, or are we like a tyrant, you know, to ourself? Or are we just this permissive absentee parent, you know, anything goes? How are we balanced within our own self and operating with our thought, feeling, and action? That's where we need to really come back. And then we can look at our relationships to others. We can look at our relationships with our parents, with our siblings, with our spouses, with our children, with our neighbors, with our, you know, all the people that we interact with in life. We can then go to the relationships with, you know, these, you know, entities like corporations and government institutions. And we can look at that. Is it an equitable, reciprocal relationship? Because reciprocity is really a natural principle as well. And that has to do really with, you know, the value of all people, right? Reciprocity, equal rights, you know, no one has more rights than another. I don't get to just go and like tell you what to do, but that's happening all the time. And these artificial entities that we are interacting with all the time. So we can start to see that. And then we can ask
the voting system, right? It says, if there's more of us than there of you guys, then we're right.
Yeah. You know, like taxes is a really good example. And, you know, we, you know, and so then it leads to this analysis of our own relationship to authority, our relationship to the unnatural, to those things that if our work is maybe we're in a little box, a little compartment, and what we're immediately doing doesn't seem to hurt anyone. But that we have to look further than that. We need to look at, well, what is the bigger system that we're a part of? And is this bigger system doing harm, you know, a few steps removed from where we are? And if we are working for, say, this is, you know, where Marx says, you're a moral trash if you work for the government, right? If you're a rule follower. And I had to really think about that, even in terms of my work, which is I'm a clinical social worker. I'm a therapist. I help people all the time. It's really easy to think I'm the good guy. But then if I'm working, you know, in an environment that is, you know, like being funded by the government and given like restrictions and rules about who I can help and when I can help them and how I can help them and what kind of labels they need to have and which interventions I could use. Like, I'm really part of an immoral system. And I don't want to be part of an immoral system. I want to free myself from that. So bit by bit, I'm freeing myself. I'm cutting those cords because I don't want to be connected with that energetically. I don't want to be restricted to only helping people in the way that this government institution says I should be. And so we all can start to make adaptation changes in our lives that bring us more aligned with moral principles. And yes, there's going to be a sacrifice for that. You know, you might lose your health insurance. You might lose your paid time off. You might have to work your ass off and make your business. You might need to do trades with people. You might need to live in a smaller house. So these are the personal decisions that we all have to face, you know, about how we eat, how we live, where we work, you know, and start to take the blinders off and stop saying, I don't have any power. I can't do anything about it. I'm just a poor me individual. I'm a slave to the system. And we need to say, wait a minute, there are some ways I can disconnect. There are some ways that I can speak up. There are ways that I can show that I really, really value life for all individuals across this planet, that I value this earth, that I value the animals and the fish and the birds, you know, that I value the sun that rises every morning, you know, that I've, you know, like.
Yeah, your heart beating in your chest is like every moment is your opportunity. And every one of those moments that's just being kind of like used in a way that's not really what you want to be doing, like you described earlier, Leslie, is like, it, you know, we need to start recognizing that. Maybe we can't change it immediately. Each of us are on our own journey. But as soon as we start recognizing that and being like, you know what, this time is actually kind of being stolen from me. No, it is being stolen from me. You know, then all of a sudden we have this realization like, yeah, wow, it is. Yes. And that's not a happy realization.
No.
But once we have it, we're more conscious and we can start modulating our decisions from that point forward to, yes, kind of wedge our way out of this situation as much as possible. And I think our best leverage on that is speaking out and having these conversations with others at this point, communicating.
And so, being a model of good moral values, you know, in your life, and being that for your children, and taking your value of life and yourself out into the world, you know, with your creative gifts and your talents, and appreciating that value, you know, outwardly, really important.
Well, we have, let's just do, I think we have two more clips.
Yeah,
so let's play those and we'll close up the show after that.
Okay.
So I got clip number 5 lined up here and I'll play that right now. Here we go.
What else are you likely to confront on this journey? Your resistance, your unhealed traumas, rigid belief systems and worldviews, dilemmas, and some pain. Reflect on the ways you are out of alignment with the knowledge of your value and the importance of upholding your rights and the rights of others. This can be a difficult process, and it can sometimes feel like too much, but yet it is the most important work to do.
Go ahead and play the next one, and then we can finish it up.
Okay. Replace screen sharing, clip number 6.
You can squander the value of your life by wrong actions. And these actions can most definitely impact the freedom of others and lead to a synergized suffering, a greater suffering for all. The more of us that recognize our value and act as such, the freer world we have. Your value is not measured by material wealth or possessions, nor social status or the number of likes on your posts, etc. Pursuing those will not bring you true happiness or true wealth. Any story in your head that tries to deny your value or the value of others is not the truth, but a lie that was most likely created by trauma or cultural programming. Traumas from your past, built on the traumas of our descendants, have created veils that shadow us from the knowledge of our infinite value, of our connection to the all that is. If we are conscious of the miracle of life itself, we will see the value of every sentient being, and we will naturally want to respect all life. We will naturally defend against any diminishment of our own life and the right to live freely. So value yourself and each other, value life itself, and prepare yourself to defend it as the most important purpose of your life.
What is most important in this life? You know, what is important to you? What else is more important, you know, like my self-defense teacher says, than your life or your loved ones? And whose job is it to protect those lives? You know, if you outsource that job to someone else and you don't like the job they're doing, it's kind of your fault for outsourcing that whole job. So protecting yourself and protecting your loved ones is actually your responsibility. And that has not been taught to us when we were a kid. Self-defense martial arts is like encouraged a little bit when you're a young boy, not that much for females in this continent, as much as it seems like some others, but it does seem like as soon as you get past, you know, being a kid, all of a sudden martial arts is kind of almost like not encouraged by most society, except people that get into it. It's a very small percentage, 1 to 2% from what I've looked up, of people that stick with any kind of training or martial arts. But, you know, what your talk there really speaks to me is the importance of, now there's one physical thing we could do in the world right now, all of us, is start training for dealing with difficult situations. So you don't need to wait for someone else. And there's a lot to that. The principles, we do have to respect the world we're in and the laws, the so-called law, man's law in place that will destroy your life if you do the wrong thing.
If you do wrong according to their law,
well,
you'd be doing something totally okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that I did martial arts in my earlier life, and I've done some little bit with you actually, and with the teacher that you've really continued on with, and I realize that by stepping into the physical action, that it brings up the mental, it brings up the emotional blocks. So we have to get out of just the thinking about these things, and we need to get into the body, and we need to experience our body under pressure. We need to practice difficult situations and build the confidence and the skill to be able to hold on to our thinking under pressure and in difficult situations. And that means, you know, we need to face our traumas. We need to face our fears. We need to not run away. We need to not run away from ourselves or from the potential that we have to do something good in the world. You know, so there is a responsibility here, I think, just by virtue of being alive at this time, to do your personal healing work and to put out some good in the world. So that's kind of all I really wanted to say here. And Chris, I really appreciate you bringing the clips and giving me the chance to talk a little bit more on this topic. And
folks, check out alivethrive.life. That's Leslie's website. And oh, hey, what's up, Chris Nelson? Check out Chris Nelson's evolveconsciousness.org and the One Great Work Launchpad on Wednesdays.
Yeah. Check out Dissolving the Divide as well, which is my
YouTube channel.
With Derek Romicelli on YouTube, and, you know, Girls Club a little bit with, you know, we did some collaboration with Sarah Cross, who I love, and
Crosstalk. You know, there's
some really good work. Yeah, Crosstalk is
Revolution
where she's
Radio.
Yeah. Crypt Rick, Revolution Radio, Will Keller, WillKeller.com, Logan Hart's Wizard Factory. You know, we've got some great...
There's a lot of tools out there. And, yeah. You know, you folks can be creating tools too. I mean, that's why, you know, I've created this book and I'm trying to encourage people to check out the book that I created or The End of All Evil by Jeremy Locke. Because these books, like when I first read that book by Jeremy Locke, it was revolutionary to me. A lot of the thoughts and ideas were like hitting me like a freight train. It was like, whoa, how come no one ever said it like that before? That makes a lot of sense. That's the opposite of what I've been hearing most of my life, but it makes way more sense than what I've been hearing. So, you know, a lot of this is just exposing more minds to these ideas and starting to prep our world for the time when we can actually start implementing a different lifestyle in the physical realm. But it's got to start with our understanding of the principles, really good rhetoric and material and creativity. And your time in your life is your energy. It is your currency. It's your ability to spend that on something, like you said, that is really important.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is cultivate relationships with people. You know, don't stay too isolated because of your disillusionments and, you know, the kind of negativity that can enter our minds, you know, where we don't want to go out into the world. You know, interact with people, you know, see the heart in people, let your heart guide you, you know, to connect where people are at, recognizing the suffering that got them to their limited beliefs and ignorance. And with that compassion, I think that is a key that can turn some minds around. And the connection between people is so crucial. People feel so alone and isolated and have lost hope because of that. So if we can bring our heart as well as our minds into the world, and not only online, but in our local, you know, communities, I think that we can make an impact more than we realize. So
beautiful. Thanks, Leslie. Crazy Winfield says, you guys are awesome. Great episode today.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Everybody in the chat, I really appreciate it. And I'm going to close out by playing my little video I made of my book showing up. And that's my fun commercial to leave the show tonight. Check out Crip Rick's show on Mondays and check out Crosstalk Radio and all the other ones we discussed. Oh, Sound Path to Freedom's coming up Labor Day weekend. Hopefully I'll get an advertisement to put up soon for that. But if you guys haven't checked out Sound Path to Freedom, check that out.
Yeah. And we're planning another funnel, another Freedom
Room. Oh, yeah, Funnel 5 is around the corner. We're starting to get that going. So
in the new year.
A lot of good things happening, and I hope we're encouraging and motivating some of you to light up, ignite that your heart, and be the change in the world by making those choices. All right. Much love, folks. We'll see you next week or the one after, whenever we can. Evil's the destruction of freedom.
Ooh, it's exciting. All the dogs are barking in the neighborhood. I got a knife and I got a box right here. It is a box. It's full of books. And I'm excited to open it. That's why I have the knife. It's for good intention. See, good knife. A knife can be for something good or something. There are a book that changed my life.
Wow.
I like the cover, and this is the real thing.
Look at all the boxes.
And they're all accounted for. We're going to send them. So books are going to be getting packed up, folks. Whoever ordered a book, I'll be sending you an email. And this is exciting. Thanks so much, whoever purchased a book. And I'm very excited to share these. And we'll be updating them. So if you're part of the first people that actually read the book, let me know what you think and how you feel about it, and I'll take your comments into my thought process towards the next iteration where I make changes, and the newer version will have perhaps your thoughts involved, possibly. So hope you guys like it. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Stop and ask, how the hell did I get here? You've been climbing your whole life, pushing, proving, surviving. You're standing at the edge of everything you thought you wanted, and for the first time, you look around. You see it all differently. This isn't the end of the trail. It's the start of seeing clearly. This book and this moment are urging you to pause, to reframe, to reface your life with a new kind of bravery. The book that changed my life. Are you ready to start your new life? Are you ready to awaken to the purpose and the passion that's been waiting inside of you all along? Check out andevil.life. Evil is the destruction of freedom.